February 2008, 20 years of experience, 15-hour days, a show climbing the ratings, and a paycheck that felt like an insult. Sitting across from Joe Scarborough at breakfast, I finally said the words I'd been rehearsing for months: I'm done. Despite our undeniable on-air chemistry and Morning Joe's rising success, MSNBC paid me a fraction of what my male colleagues earned. Joe was worth more to the show, no question, but 14 times more? The math didn't add up, and my bank account couldn't take it anymore. Joe had been fighting for me behind the scenes, but nothing changed. He asked for more time. I'd already given too much. What I didn't realize then was that my greatest opponent wasn't sitting across the negotiating table, it was sitting in my chair. Every conversation about money became a masterclass in self-sabotage. I'd ask, then apologize, demand, then deflect. This wasn't just my story, it was the story of nearly every accomplished woman I'd come to meet. After nearly a year of unemployment following my CBS dismissal, I was desperate. At 40, rejected by network after network, I believed my career was over. So when MSNBC offered me 30-second news updates three times a night, I said yes. It was humiliating work, but it paid bills and let me tuck my daughters into bed. When opportunities expanded to full news hours, colleagues were genuinely impressed. High fives after flawless broadcasts, recognition I hadn't felt in years. Then came the IMIS slot. Joe Scarborough wanted something different, unscripted, intelligent, risky. From our first broadcast, we clicked. Morning Joe became the breakthrough program I wanted my daughters to see me host. But gratitude costs. I worked around the clock, booking newsmakers while jogging, glued to my BlackBerry. My contract moved me from freelance to staff, but barely. I discovered even Willie Geist had negotiated better terms. I'd failed the most basic test of professional life. I didn't know my worth, so I accepted what they offered. Gratitude had become my ceiling. Research reveals women request raises 85% less often than men, and when they do, they ask for 30% less. Our MSNBC survey found men describe salary negotiations as challenging but manageable. Women compare it to root canals. Valerie Jarrett, senior advisor to President Obama, worked twice as hard as anyone but never asked for advancement until a mentor pushed her. When she finally requested a promotion, her boss agreed immediately. Women expect that if you do really well, someone will recognize your performance, Jarrett explained. Men just ask. Tina Brown admitted she'd overlooked a qualified woman at the Daily Beast while hiring two men who failed at the same job, only realizing her mistake when the woman finally spoke up. Carol Bartz, former Yahoo CEO, confessed she was hired on the cheap at Autodesk because competing male candidates demanded millions more. Sheryl Sandberg explained the pattern clearly. Men overestimate their performance, women underestimate theirs. Men credit their skills for success, women credit luck. This isn't modesty, it's a career killer. Despite comprising over half the workforce and earning more college degrees than men, women make 77 cents for every dollar men earn. The leadership gap is starker. Women hold only 17% of congressional seats, placing America 72nd globally, behind Afghanistan and Pakistan. Only 3% of Fortune 500 companies have female CEOs. Across business, law, academia, journalism, and politics, women occupy fewer than 20% of top positions. Both men and women unconsciously devalue female employees. Catalyst experiments showed identical resumes with only gender identifiers changed consistently resulted in men being rated terrific candidates, while women with identical qualifications were deemed unqualified. Women exhibit this bias just as strongly as men. Harvard's Project Implicit test revealed even gender equity advocates subconsciously associate males with career and females with family. The wage gap begins immediately. Female MBA graduates are consistently placed at lower levels than male counterparts, creating permanent disadvantage that compounds over entire careers. After watching Joe negotiate through aggressive confrontation, shouting, threats, finger pointing, I tried his approach. The men would escalate dramatically, then pivot to casual sports talk, everyone laughing. When I attempted this, it backfired. My voice pitched higher, my body shook. Instead of my raise, I left Phil alarmed. He later called Joe asking, "Is she crazy?" Donnie Deutsch explained, "If a woman punches you, you think, what's wrong with her?" Even Joy Behar, who fearlessly challenges guests on air, admits discomfort demanding money. "I've always been the good girl," she confessed. Harvard professor Hannah Riley Bowles calls this the double bind. Women must be assertive enough to be taken seriously, but likable enough to avoid backlash. She advocates relational accounts, framing requests to show concern for organizational relationships, not just personal gain. As Anna Quindlen says, women have to be tough as nails and warm as toast. Take either extreme alone and you lose. When I confronted Phil Griffin again, I was direct. "You are a bad boyfriend. You take and take and take, but never give." My willingness to walk away led to a new contract. Joe became my advocate, guaranteeing I'd match my CBS salary. He understood my value better than I did. Strategic alliances matter. Research shows women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. Plenty of advice, not enough advocacy. Sheila Bair credits Robert Dole for supporting women with real power, not just tokenism. Knowing just one person in an organization increases negotiated salary by 4.7%. But here's the uncomfortable truth. Many successful women report being undermined more by female colleagues than male ones. The only time I cried over my pay dispute was during a meeting with a female middle manager who insisted I abandon my raise request because I'd get a bad reputation. For 30 minutes, she argued I should focus on winning MSNBC's Miss Congeniality Prize. Her strategy worked. I actually worried about coworkers disliking me. Looking back, I'm ashamed I fell for this manipulation. After 2 decades of learning what not to do, here's what I know. Preparation beats fear every time. Document your achievements. Know your market value. Ask people about salary despite company policies prohibiting it. Go in before raises are budgeted, not after. Replace apologetic language with facts. True negotiating power comes from financial security. An 8-month emergency fund provides confidence to negotiate without desperation. Motherhood complicates everything. Working mothers face the widest wage gap, earning just 79 cents for every dollar paid to fathers. Women lean backward in anticipation of family responsibilities, stopping pursuit of promotions before even having children. Many overcompensate at work while demanding less compensation, feeling lucky to have both children and careers. Even in dual-career households, women still do twice the housework and 3.5 times the childcare. Our families' futures depend on our knowing what we should be paid and getting it. If we can't quantify and communicate our value with confidence, the achievements of the women before us will have been for nothing. Your worth isn't negotiable, but your willingness to claim it is.